Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now Scadaboo shifts to the left side of the quarterback, Sam Levitt, on third down. Play action. Levitt looks, fires for the end zone. It's intercepted! Picked off! Intercepted! Andrew Makuba! This ball game is over! Texas is going to the Final Four!
Longhorns Radio Network capping off what I believe is an all-time great college football game. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Our first show of 2025, and we're so thrilled to be back and to be able to talk about that game from yesterday, which has been, Perloff, the only real exciting game we've had in these college football playoffs. It feels amazing to talk about today because of just how epic it was.
Epic.
Yeah, epic.
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 Okay. Let's talk about a couple things. How would you describe Arizona's offense throughout that game? I would say the quarterback gets in shotgun, runs around for his life, and throws it out of bounds for 78% of the game. I would say Cam Scadaboo mostly ran into the line and got tackled immediately. I would say Texas went to sleep and could not run the ball and still kept trying to run the ball, even though because they thought they had the game won. I would say this was a game of mistakes more than an epic game.
Well, how about overcoming mistakes? And Cam Scadaboo, who is the running back but kind of do it all for Arizona State on offense, actually had one of the biggest plays of the game, which was coming in to throw a touchdown pass on a fourth down, a 42-yard touchdown, a bomb, really.
And, which he underthrew by at least 23 yards.
Well, you know what? It connected, and it was one of the big turning points of the game, and had Arizona State, a game that went to double overtime, I should say, and had Arizona State been able to pull that off, that would have been the defining moment of the game. And the fact that this was a guy who is puking his brains out on the sideline, he's the engine that makes everything go for Arizona State. Everyone knows that. And then he comes in and has the second half he was able to have. Because you're right, he was running into the line, but then started to break tackles and started to, you know, make a difference for Arizona State. And this became a ball game. And I think to have an epic game, it can't just be a straightforward game. Mm. You know, we love shootouts where, you know, teams are going score for score, and that's all fun. But to become an epic game, you need some missed field goals. You need a weird, you know, a fake punt. How about a controversial call? And this was a serious one. They should have called targeting on an Arizona State wide receiver who was a defenseless receiver, but they did not call it. So a weird call there that adds to the lore of the game. It had everything.
Well, I don't know if I feel like mistakes define a great game, like a sloppy game, because I think USC Texas, now listen, I don't have the box score in front of me. As I recall, both offenses, every time they touched the ball, had brilliant plays scored. Like, it was either Reggie Bush or Vince Young. In my mind, it was the perfectly played game. What actually happened, I don't really remember. It was 20 years ago. But I'm not sure. Like, that game was like, it was a grind for both offenses in a big way. And also, just I thought there were major strategic mistakes by Texas. I thought Arizona State, like, kind of got a couple lucky plays to get back in there. And then overtime was, again, like, oh, my God, how do you let the Texas receiver behind you on fourth down? Amazing. Like, these mistakes, these mental mistakes were killing me.
And Perloff's talking about the fourth down that Quinn Ewers was able to connect with Matthew Golden, fourth and 13, because they got a false start penalty. Everything was going against Texas at that point. They end up coming up with an all-time great 4th and 13 for the touchdown. And then, obviously, the way overtime works in college, then, you know, Arizona State went first in the first overtime. Texas goes first in the second overtime. They scored a first play, right? And then Arizona State throws an interception, and that ended the game. So it was amazing. Can we hear from Arizona State head coach Kenny Dillingham, who's now becoming, I think, one of the kind of star coaches of the sport, Prof. He's only 34 years old, took over a team that was picked to finish last in the conference, and here they are going throw for throw, or rush for rush, I guess, with Texas. Talked about Cam Scadaboo and how his passion on the sideline, you saw it erupt after the early struggles.
If him being competitive and passionate on the sideline is a negative, then I'm in the wrong sport. The kid's competitive, the kid's passionate. And if that's a negative, then I don't know what a positive is. Because kids that care and kids that have passion and kids that believe is the exact reason why we had a chance to win this football game. So I love Cam, and we're going to have a relationship forever.
Yeah, here is Scadaboo explaining that he was sick on the sideline. The sideline report was, I think they said, emptied his stomach, which is a funny way to put it. Here's Cam.
I threw up. I mean, I threw up. I drank too much water too fast, and I was kind of feeling sloshy, and then felt better after. So
you can rally.
You know, I was...
Man, been there. Mm. Sometimes a well-placed puke can save your day. Night.
Puke and rally, like Kenny Dillingham said.
We called it the boot and rally when I was in college. But sometimes you just got to pull the trigger, do it, and then just get on with your evening.
I threw up.
By the way, that reminded me, anyone who has kids, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever seen that? My son has done that. Like, all of a sudden, they're out of their, they come into your bedroom. Like, is everything all right in the middle of the night?
I threw up.
Meanwhile, one of the great boot and rallies of all time, though.
Was it?
Yes.
I mean, they lost, though. So. Yeah.
He did everything he possibly could. There were times when Cam Scadaboo, and I know we're talking about the loser of this game more than the winner, but there were times where Cam Scadaboo, Perloff, was taking on like four Texas defensive linemen at the goal line and still getting in.
Yeah. Okay. There was some social media activity saying, oh, Cam Scadaboo just jumped Ashton Gentry in the NFL draft. Oh, my God. Get out of here. Ashton Gentry on one leg is a better NFL prospect than Cam Scadaboo. I understand he's the hero of the moment. He's super, super fun. He's got the best name of any college football player ever. There is no way that player is a better NFL prospect than Ashton Gentry.
Okay, well, Ashton Gentry is a little more straightforward, I think, but I'm surprised at you because you love not a gadget guy, but you love Taysom Hill. You love guys who can do a lot of different
things. Taysom Hill runs a 4.3. That Cam Scadaboo does not run a 4.3.
I'm just saying, yeah. You like guys who are weapons and you use them in interesting ways. What do you think Cam Scadaboo is going to be in the NFL?
A creative
head coach is going to have a lot of fun with a guy who's got his kind of skill set.
Right, but that's like a fifth-round pick, like a Darren Sproles. I think Ashton Gentry is a totally different thing. And a lot of people say, I also heard people say, like, oh, man, he should have been, like, a Heisman finalist. Like, what? I think people are a little prisoner of the moment. He was great last night. He's been great all year, especially after Arizona State lost their only, I guess they have one receiver who can catch a football.
Yeah,
and he was not there. Yep. So he's not been there. It's incredible. It's heroic what he's done. But I did not see, like, a NFL star right there. He just feels like he's not going to be like, I don't know, like running back shouldn't go in the first round unless they're incredibly, incredibly special. And I don't think he's that. And maybe I'm missing something, like maybe he will, but that didn't look like a first round pick to me at all.
Interesting.
You think he's a first round pick at a running back?
I don't know. Because here's the thing, two things. One, I think we're going to be looking at running backs a little bit differently this year. Number one, because you saw sort of a shift in the NFL. So many teams playing those two high safeties, basically just leaving the entire middle of the field open. And we saw running backs having a moment this year, including Saquon Barkley, which we'll talk about in just a little bit, almost breaking Eric Dickerson's rushing record. I think the idea of getting your running back in the first round is not going to scare people away like it has in the past. Because you do get the fifth-year option. You do get to keep them on reasonable contracts for longer. And then after they're done with their first contract, not to be insensitive about it, then you probably, replace them. I could see Scadaboo. I don't know if he's a first-round pick, but I think he's going to be pretty close.
Wow.
Yeah. I think he's like one of those kind of weapons that, with the right coach, could be really fun. Now, Gentry might be a top 15.
Yeah, I think he will be. I don't know. How old is Cam Scadaboo? I feel like he's been playing a long time.
Age doesn't matter anymore.
Well, I do feel like for a running back, like, I think is he 23 already? Like, I just don't know. It feels like a college star, not a NFL star necessarily.
Cam Scadaboo's 22. He'll be 23 in February.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll see how he does in the pre-draft process. Obviously, I think for a running back, a 40 time's pretty big. Like, you can't run like a 4.6. We'll see. I think Ashton Jeanty is way different. I think if you put Ashton Jeanty in that game last night, Scatabu, by the way, was not super effective for most of the game. I mean, they really, they almost ended the game with 8 points.
I know.
And get the puke and rally, Pearl. Come
see,
on.
That's the whole thing.
I think Texas's defense just got tired, in part because their offense did nothing. Like, if their offense could get a first down, then I don't think Arizona State could just keep pounding with the running back and the quarterback running the ball. I think this was like partly Texas made this a game.
Yeah, I think you're not giving enough credit to Arizona State. Had a momentum changer with the fake punt, tried to do creative things. And then here's the thing with the Texas defensive line, where all of a sudden Scatabue did start having success.
Right, they were exhausted.
Well, is that not on them?
That's 100% on the offense. Like, where was this? You have Steve Sarkisian, probably the best play caller in the country, and you have Quinn Ewers, should be a first-round pick. You should be able to kill some clock in this game.
Well, then you should put that on Sark, because there were drives in the second half and in the fourth quarter when they could have bled way more clock and decided to keep throwing the ball.
In the first half, I think they ran for about 23 yards. So Weiser had 18 carries for 45 yards, 2.5 yards per carry. In college football, that is a disaster. For a team like Texas and a coach like Sarkisian, if you could run for 2 yards a carry, I mean, picture him at Alabama. Did he ever have 2 yards a carry? This is like Texas physically did not show up in this game. I do not know what happened to their run game. So eventually he gave up on it like he should have. It was terrible.
They had 5 drives in the second half, okay? And one was basically one play, 1 yard, like a kneel down. Not a kneel down, but that very end of the game that went into, excuse me. Sorry. They had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 drives, pardon me. And here's the times on these drives. A minute 36, 5 seconds, that was the safety. They went on a 5-minute touchdown drive. Okay, good for them. Then the interception, they had the ball for 54 seconds, two plays. The missed field goal was a 3-minute, 21-second drive.
Yeah.
And then under a minute with the missed field goal, as there are obviously times expiring. They killed no clock in the second half.
But they couldn't. I mean, there was no reason to run. They couldn't get more than 2 yards. What was the point?
Isn't that on the offensive coordinator?
Isn't that on
the head coach, who's an offensive genius, to try to scheme up some run plays?
I guess so. I honestly do not know how the run game disappeared on them. But I'll tell you, if in the next round it disappears, they're going to get blown out. So here's the thing with Texas. They have one weapon. It's so obvious that Matthew Golden is it. He's like CeeDee Lamb on the Cowboys. So what's happening in the next round? You're going against Ohio State team with Superman Caleb Downs. Like, there's no way this is going to work for Texas.
855-212-4227. You can go vote on our poll. Was the Texas-Arizona State Peach Bowl matchup an all-time great college football game? I say yes. Perloff says no. No is winning. 52% to 48%. How?
But it wasn't. It's the word great.
Well, I don't know what else you'd use. So,
like, epic might be better. It was definitely epic, but it wasn't great because it was so poorly played.
Mark says if Arizona State had won, yes, it would be. Do you need the upset to be considered an all-time great game?
And what if Texas loses by 30 to Ohio State?
You know, I still think it can be considered an all-time great game.
I think what we're talking about really gets to the core of this 12-team format. Like, I think that are these going to be, yes, it's a win or go home. It's like an epic game. Like, I think as the playoffs expand, these games are going to feel less and less epic. When there was only, like, one BCS game, like, yes, that was huge. Like, basically, is a quarterfinal matchup going to go down in history as a big deal as a title game? Of course not.
Well, I remember TCU-Michigan. That was a great game, and I know what happened. TCU got smoked by Georgia in the national title game, but it doesn't take away from the fact that TCU-Michigan was an all-time great game.
Absolutely takes away from the fact.
855-212-4227. I'm going to give you another one, and I didn't want to bring this up because it's a painful memory for me, but you're saying basically that if it's not the championship game, then it's hard to be an all-time epic game. It's kind of what I'm...
No, in college football.
Okay.
I know where you... NFL's a little different,
but yeah. I was going to say, nobody here brought up the 13 seconds game.
Yeah, but 13
seconds... I appreciate your restraint. It's a painful memory
for me. But that's not, like, I don't think the 13 seconds game makes top 10 list of all time games. If it was a Super Bowl, it would be like one or two.
I think it's going to be remembered for a long, long time.
I mean, I think there's a conversation about, I mean, there's top 10, then there's top five. I mean, I don't think you have to be top five or top 10 to be all time. It could still be a great game.
But if a 13-second game had happened in the Super Bowl, that would be like one, two, or three.
Sure. I mean, I think the Giants beating the Patriots is elevated purely because it was
the
Super Bowl.
That was one on most.
That was a game which was well played. It was like, what, 6-3 for most of the game? I mean, that was not an entertaining game for three quarters.
But it was a Super Bowl. Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
855-212-4227. You know, I was hoping that our pal Big Easy would call in today. Big Easy, of course, in New Orleans. And Big Easy, our hearts are heavy with you today after the tragedy yesterday. 15 people have died. Dozens were hurt in the terrorist attack on Bourbon Street on New Year's Eve. Big Easy, how are you?
We're doing okay. You know, I mean, the Louisiana people, New Orleans people, are resilient people. You know, we go through a lot, so you know, we go together. I truly believe that. But you know, it's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm never told y'all what I do for a living. I mean, I've been doing a share ride for 8 years. I was driving that night. You know, and just like everybody else, everybody was somewhere that night, you know, having a good time. This could happen to anyone. But, you know, I feel like New Yorkers can share, you know, the morning because they know they go, you just go through stuff, you know. I just want to say, you know, Happy New Year to you guys. And, you know, I'm looking forward to tonight's game, you know, but I was driving out of the city when it happened, and with passengers, you know, and the way they designed it, you cannot cross either side of canal. So you have to come up through one side to come down to the other side. And I don't want to shine the light on this, you know, because, we're still dealing with it, but, I've never seen, security like this in my life. It's just unreal. I mean, it's something I've never seen in my life. It's horrible. You know, I don't know. I can't really put words in it. I just, you know, it's just a horrible thing. And, you know, I just want to tell y'all that, you know, Happy New Year. I love the show. I'm listening. And, you know, we as a people will get through this. And, you know, I know nobody because they're not disclosing all the names right now. But it was described how the way he went through and so forth. I don't want to put words into it. It's just horrible.
No.
And, but you guys,
Big
you
Easy,
know,
thank you.
I'm looking forward to seeing you guys when y'all come down to Radio Row. You know,
oh, yeah.
I hope this, you know, doesn't, you know, undermine what the events that are coming up. You'll understand that this could happen anywhere.
Oh, absolutely. You know, no, Big Easy, I mean, and we really are thinking about you, everyone in New Orleans, and it's just devastating. You're right. There are no words. And, you know, Perloff, I think I can speak for both of us here. And Big Easy, thank you, and Happy New Year to you. And what a horrible way to start the new year. But, you know, we're going to get through it. We love New Orleans. It's one of our absolute favorite places to visit. As I said, my best friend lives there. We've been there for several sporting events throughout our careers. It's one of the best big event towns on earth. And this is not going to change that. We're still excited to come to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And whatever kind of getting back to normal or picking up the pieces and all of that in the aftermath of this horrible tragedy, you know, we'll try to do our super small part of that. But right now, this is really unsettling. The fact they're going to play the Sugar Bowl today at 4 o'clock Eastern time, is it feels odd to me because this still feels like an open investigation, even though we know who the terrorist is, but they're saying he may not have acted alone.
Yes, I know what you mean, but I am actually, I'm glad that they are playing and they didn't move the game out of New Orleans. I'm glad. I think I said this earlier. I'm kind of glad for the players. I'm sure they don't want to be there anymore. Like, I'm sure they want to play. And because right now they're sitting probably in their hotel rooms and nobody wants
to. Terrified.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, I think that just sitting and thinking is probably not the most fun thing to do right now. I'm sure they want to. They want, they're, you know how you get hyped up for a game and they were hyped. I'm sure they're just itching to get out there. I don't think waiting is going to help them. I think just playing will be better.
I know, and I get it. And for the guys who, you know, probably a lot of mixed emotions. I'm sure some have trepidation about going out there and playing with this still being sort of an active and open investigation in a lot of ways. I'm sure some are just dying to play. I'm sure some are dying to get out of there. It's probably a whole mix of things, but who do you really think about at this point if you're playing this game? Is it about the players or is it about the fans' security and safety? Is it about the city now in mourning? You know, there's no right answer here. Is it appropriate to be playing a football game today? 855-212-4227. Okay, we have a lot to do. Perloff and I are back for the first time in 2025. We're thrilled to be here, and we are in some ways treating this Thursday just a smidge like a Monday, which means the M&P 500 comes your way next. Whose stock is up and whose stock is down after a big week in football?
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. Happy New Year. Just to revisit a small debate we had on the show, several debates going on about college football playoff. Mel Kiper's big board, where do you think is Cam Scataboo, Arizona State running back, amongst his running back rankings?
Well, I ask you, are those Mel Kiper standings, are they updated after the game yesterday?
What did Cam Scataboo average per rush yesterday?
It doesn't matter. The dude was the Iron Man. He showed so much yesterday in overcoming whatever to make an impact on that game. He was the whole reason why Arizona State even made this an epic comeback.
The NFL doesn't care about any of that. He's not in his top 10 running backs. And we'll see. He's a bit older. He's a great college player. I like your ideas of him as a gadget player, but the gadget player is probably going fourth or fifth round. I would imagine he's a mid-level third, fourth round pick, which is pretty awesome for, because that, like, that's what used to be a first round running back. Ashton Gentry, we'll get into that later in the show. I'm still into that dude. Like, I want him on my team, especially in the year of the running back. I think he's fantastic. But we have still a breakdown yesterday's game, and I still think it was ugly. The more I think about it, Arizona State and Texas, I'm not impressed. I will not put it on my list of epic games, the Perloff list.
Oh, wow. The cracking the Perloff list is like the Ten Commandments. It's like Moses coming down.
The Perloff list that has, I have USC, Texas, the 0-0 tie in 1951 between Notre Dame and Army. Like, this is not going to get in there.
Let's go to Gary wants to talk about another moment from what I believe was an all-time great college football game between Texas and Arizona State. It was very controversial. It was a play that looked like clear targeting. An Arizona State receiver was a defenseless receiver, and a Texas safety kind of comes over and hits him helmet to helmet. They reviewed it. It was ruled not targeting. And it was a massive moment at the end of the game. Gary, what do you have?
Hi, Maggie. Yeah, good morning and Happy New Year to you guys.
Same to you.
I'm a 66-year-old guy that I've seen everything. And I mean everything. I also happen to be a Canadian, so I've seen every bad hit in hockey. And I mean bad.
Yeah.
Now, in this case, I'm being the referee. He shouldn't be worrying about the 60 or 70,000 people who are screaming at him. He shouldn't be worrying about the other bench. He shouldn't be worrying about the other players that are on the other side. He's only worrying about one thing, what he saw, and is it absolutely targeting?
Yes.
Now, me, I don't have any slow-mo, but he does, and he probably went piece by piece by piece, and yes, the guy hit the helmet, hit the front part of the helmet.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, just because the guy's lying there on the
yeah, but Gary, Gary, Happy New Year, and thanks for calling the show. But yeah, the guy was hurt, so the receiver is definitely hurt. But that's not what I'm talking about. Even if the receiver had popped up and been okay, it was still targeting.
By rule, yeah.
By rule. Yep. Like, that's it, period, end of story. And the fact that they actually went to the review, looked at it in fast mo, slow mo, regular mo, all the mo's. Mm-hmm. It's targeting in every mo. Every angle, all the 3,500 cameras that they have on this game, and every single one of them, it showed targeting. I don't know what that referee was thinking about. I think he was, in his mind, saying, I'm not going to decide the game on this targeting call, and that's the wrong way to officiate. Period.
Well, yeah, but counter-argument, I think ESPN certainly wants Texas in there to advance.
Well, then don't even play the game. Because if you're not going to call the game the way that it needs to be called, then don't even... Listen, it's one thing, a catch, no catch, yeah, or whatever. This one, yes, do we need more consistency in our targeting rules throughout the season? No doubt.
Yeah.
But come on, this one was so obvious.
So you're saying when the officials go on the phone to figure out targeting, Jimmy Pitaro, the head of ESPN, should not be on that call?
You know, it's funny. I wasn't sure if he was on the call. They go right to his office.
Reese Davis says it was not targeting.
What does Kirk Herbstreit think, though? Andrew Bogish is here. What does Andrew Bogish think about this?
It was targeting.
Yeah.
There are no shows, and then there's what Oregon did yesterday in the Rose Bowl.
Well, Howard gets the snap on first down. Henderson running right side, hits his own 35, gets to the 40, down the right sideline to the Oregon 40, goes Henderson to the 30 of the Ducks, to the 20, to the 10, to the house, Travion Henderson.
That's Paul Keels from Learfield. Travion Henderson's 66-yard scamper, the last touchdown of Ohio State's 34-0 start to the Rose Bowl. All four of their first half TDs were from 40-plus yards out. Ducks head coach Dan Lanning says the obvious.
We got to be able to adjust a little bit faster, right? There were some things that we were able to get going at points, throughout the game. We didn't adjust fast enough, and it's tough when you play a team that doesn't have a lot of weaknesses.
Oregon did score right before and after halftime to make this a 34-15 game, but the Buckeyes retook control. They won 41-21. Joining Texas in next Friday's semifinal in Dallas, the Longhorns with a boring 39-31 double OT win over Arizona State in the Peach Bowl. Texas blew a 24-8 fourth quarter lead, then had to score on fourth down to force the second OT. A Quinn Ewers touchdown pass, then a pick, got them the win. The QB knows they were lucky.
I'm just so proud of the way that the entire team stayed poised and composed through the entire game, especially through overtime. And you know, it definitely feels a lot better to be on this end of the win in overtime.
Cam Scataboo, 242 scrimmage yards, two rushing scores, and a 42-yard passing TD in defeat.
And Perloff's like,
whatever.
It was really the Texas defense that allowed it. I like, this is crazy. He was amazing yesterday.
Yeah, he was great. I mean, again, like, do you walk away from that game and be like, God, Texas, what are you doing? How did you make that a game? I honestly, and I love Sark, I just can't believe that that game was what happened there. If they had lost, that would be like a fireable offense. Like, people would have been so mad because you saw the game. It should have been a Texas blowout, like, by all accounts, which I guess is, I'm countering my own argument. It was epic that it became a game.
Well, to be fair, though, I mean, Arizona State did outgain Texas in the game.
And wasn't time of possession insane,
time
too?
Of possession also was Arizona
Texas
State.
Fellas, like, what happened? Where well,
why,
was Texas?
Why is that's on
Texas
the coaches.
Yeah, why is it also, why is always Texas falling asleep? Why isn't the Arizona State had a good game plan and they played well? They just couldn't execute in the red zone. Really, that was the thing. That they messed up on a bunch of fourth and shorts and they couldn't score close. It was not like Texas was just, you know, their defense was just not letting them move the ball. That wasn't the case at all.
Every single play, the Arizona State quarterback dropped back and was running for his life and just chucking it anywhere. Like, the Arizona State offense didn't move at all for most of the game. And Texas is this all-world offense, this all-world team. Like, there's no excuse for me for them not to be able to move the ball against Arizona State. Like, they're like a powerhouse, right? They have Steve Sarkisian. They have Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning at quarterback.
Exactly.
Like, they scored.
Yeah, I don't think you're making the point you think you're making.
Yeah, exactly.
No, my point is, like, Texas blew it. Like, their offense really should not score 14 points in the first 5 minutes, then disappear for 50 minutes. That's totally inexcusable, right? I mean, their offense was a massive letdown yesterday. Well, can we all agree on that?
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that.
Yeah,
sure.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Texas blew it. They got really lucky to get out of there with a win. They're going to look back on that and be like, man, that's a game we should have had.
Well, and
securely.
To be honest, the offense, you want to say they got out to this 14, they scored 14 points right away. One was a punt return for a touchdown. It wasn't even
But the first drive was like lightning.
You should have a good first drive. You played last week. You have
Steve Sarkisian. You should have a good first drive, second drive, third drive, fourth drive, fifth drive.
Again, I don't think you're making the point you think you're making. A lot of people don't think Steve Sarkisian is a great big game coach.
Well, no, my point is Texas completely blew this game. Like, it should have been a handy win.
So you're giving no credit to Arizona State.
I'm not giving no credit to Arizona State, but I think the narrative would have been, wow, the Longhorns blew it. That would have been the headline if they had lost.
I mean, it would have been an upset. But the fact that it should not have looked like the beginning of Ohio State, Oregon.
It just sounds kind of like as if Arizona State was kind of lucky to be in the game.
Yes, they were.
But I feel like Texas.
They had a fake punt and running back pass. That it's not luck, but it was like the better team. Texas was by far the better team.
Okay, but
physically.
How about the fact that they had to do two scoring drives, not just touchdowns, but 2-point conversions that they had to convert and came up with a massive interception? Yeah. I mean, Quinn Ewers didn't have to throw that ball where he threw it.
Right.
I mean,
Texas blew it. They did. And also, there was a defensive holding that. I walked away, I'm like, wow, Texas really stunk up the joint yesterday.
We'll see what happens when they play Ohio State.
Yeah, that's the thing about Texas, though. Like, you have no idea. They could turn around because they have all this NFL talent. They do have good coaches. Like, they could be great next game. They should be. Don't you think, like, they should have won? I feel like I'm on an island here, but they should have won that game much more handily. They were up late in a big way.
Yeah. They had a 16-point lead in the fourth quarter.
Yes, that's what I mean.
But also, I think what EJ's point was in mind, too, is Arizona State should have had more than 8 points as well
exactly.
at that point. Like, they left points on the field. Like, the game shouldn't have been a 2-score game into the fourth quarter.
I didn't think, I totally disagree. Like, I thought, like, Texas defensive line was
torturing. I don't think you disagree on that. They, like, actually did leave points on the field. Like, they missed a field goal block.
They only were moving by penalty. Like, that was their only way of really generating much offense. Like, they were not getting a lot of, like, clean plays.
Okay, but they were in scoring position multiple times and didn't score.
Right, because their offense was totally outmanned by Texas's defense for most of the game. That's why they didn't score.
Inside the 20-yard line. Let's get to the NBA. And your Sixers, who closed 2024 in a 4-game winning streak, but no such luck in the new year.
45 seconds to go. Probe by Maxey. Off balance, force, bounces, no good. Sabonis with a rebound. He gives it up to Malik Monk. No timeout taken. 35 seconds to go. Malik to the rim. Goaltend, I believe. Yes! Count the basket!
That's Gary Gerald on Kings Radio, and that hoop was the go-ahead basket. Sacramento scoring the final 15 points of the game to steal a 113-107 win from Philly. The Nuggets got their third straight victory, 139-120 over the Hawks. Nikola Jokic, 23 points, 17 boards, 15 assists. And finally, Bryce James, LeBron's younger son, committed to Arizona yesterday. He's a 3- or 4-star recruit, depending on where you look. He held offers from Ohio State and Duquesne before picking the Wildcats. Exactly. Guys,
Duquesne, obviously, this is LeBron's buddy who's coaching the Dukes, right? I feel like we don't have the same energy. And by we, I mean LeBron. It's not the same energy to try to get Bryce into the NBA that we were for Bronny.
Although LeBron said the other day he can play for 5 more years, which would put him in Bryce trajectory, which is scary.
I did see that. Did he say 5 or 5 to 7?
He said 5 to 7. I was rounding down as a favor to him.
LeBron said he's going to play for 5.
No, he said he could play at a high level for 5 to 7 more years.
Not 2, wow. Not 3, not 4, not 5.
Oh, man. I never thought that a clip would come back to haunt him again.
Not 6, not 7.
All time. By the way, does anyone know who is the Kings interim head coach right now?
Yeah, Doug Christie.
Doug Christie. Yeah. Love it. Those are some fun Sacramento Kings years that Doug Christie was on.
This, not a fun Sacramento Kings year this year, though.
No. Could be. Maybe Doug really spices it up, though.
Okay. I mean, good luck, Sacramento.
They need a little more De'Aaron Fox and DeMontis Sabonis spicing it up, but yeah. Maybe Doug.
De'Aaron Fox is already looking for real estate in Houston. I've never seen a guy more ready to leave. He blew a defensive assignment during a holiday break, and they asked him, how do you feel about it? He's like, it doesn't really matter.
It's very Aaron Rodgers-esque. I mean, we're all just floating around, EJ. We're just specks of dust on the spinning marble. What do you expect? All right. Bogish, thank you. 855-212-4227. All right, next we will get to the M&P 500. Whose stock is up and whose stock is down as we flip the calendar to 2025.
The M&P 500 on the Infinity Sports Network.
This portion of the show is sponsored by the new 2025 Hyundai Tucson Hybrid that has class-leading advanced safety features like the available blind spot view monitor to make your ride more enjoyable. All right. Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff. It is M&P 500 time. We usually do this on Monday, but there's a lot to catch up on. Stock up, stock down. I guess we could go back to, I mean, God, there have been so many football games over the holidays. I don't even remember what day. I was like, what day is it today? I don't know, but there's football on and I love it.
All right, stock up. My first one is actually going to be a team that's not in the college football playoff, but I got to give stock up to Michigan. How about the Wolverines? So they beat Ohio State in an epic upset. Then they're a 17-point underdog against Alabama. They beat them. They never trailed in that game. Not only that, they have Bryce Underwood, who they flipped from LSU, who's the number one quarterback in the country, who's from Detroit. So they probably should have had him the whole time. But nonetheless, they've got him. The Michigan Wolverines in the post-Jim Harbaugh era ended the season on a major high note.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bowl game, so it means less than an NFL preseason game at this point. I'm not sure.
Jalen Milroe was out there. I don't think it means nothing to the Alabama
fans. Jalen Milroe's body was out there. Physically, he was out there. His mind was not there.
He did not care.
Well, he was horrible, but he did not care about that game. That was evident.
Then that's even worse than don't be out there if you're not going to give the max effort.
I'm not going to kill him for that because it is an exhibition game. Obviously, Alabama was still upset they weren't in the 12-team playoff. Probably shouldn't have been there. I don't like when people say, oh, well, they didn't make the playoff and then they lost their bowl game. Once you don't make the playoff, you stop caring at all.
Well, so, why did so many starters play?
The starters might play, but they're not, like, enthused about it. Like, it was pretty obvious Milroe was, you could tell by his body language, he didn't want to be there in the first half. Especially because Michigan's backups, because all the pro guys sat out, they are amazing. Like, those young defensive players were coming at Jalen Milroe the entire time.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Stock up Michigan. Okay. Impressive end of the season.
Okay. I'll go stock up NFL. Let's play this. I'll say what it is, because I guess the sound doesn't say it. How about Sam Darnold pulling out another win? Minnesota Vikings beat the Green Bay Packers. Walking in the locker room, this is what it sounded like. Yeah. More and more. You had to see it. He walks in. He's behind the rest of the team for some reason. They're all waiting for him.
Like an interview.
Like it's a surprise birthday party. Yeah. And they put him up on his shoulders. He does a little dance. It was awesome. That being said, I'm not totally sure what it means because unlike Minnesota always winning a lot of close games. Like that's their jam. And they seem to, like Sam Darnold make a big mistake and then pull out this amazing pass at the end of the game. It's kind of what happened again, but love what's happening in Minnesota.
I don't know if the young people are still saying the vibes are immaculate, but whatever the new saying is, if vibes are immaculate is out, is what's going on with Minnesota. Not only the great post-game speeches and the celebrations, but they have the best touchdown celebrations, and I don't even think it's close.
Well, they have Justin Jefferson as the
pioneer. Gritty. No, but they're doing like these choreographed stuff from movies from the 90s. I mean,
I'm just saying, like, Justin Jefferson obviously has a knack for coming. I'm sure he's leading them, like, in practice, like, practicing these things.
I don't know. I see they put out the rehearsal videos sometimes, and I don't think he's there.
The defensive players are having celebrations. I mean, I don't know if he's doing it with them, but
it's pretty, the white chick celebrations, all that stuff, the
High School Musical,
It's incredible.
We're all in this together. Dun, 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 you know?
I would put everyone on the spot. Does Minnesota, do they get to the NFC title game?
Hold on.
It's going to be really,
let's
really,
save that one for
I'm
a second.
I'm just saying, like,
Stocked down.
I just think, like, oh, yeah, they beat Green Bay. I'm like, ooh, Green Bay is licking their chops. I think they want to see them again. Like, this is the thing about Minnesota. Like, how'd they win that game? I don't know. I just don't know. It feels great now. Big game on Sunday night. The only game on Sunday, really, that matters. Okay.
Stock down. It's the M&P 500 if you're just joining us. Welcome. Stock down, rushing records being broken. Ashton Janti never topped Barry Sanders, came up 28. He needed 28 yards to break the record. Didn't get it before they lost to Penn State, Boise State, that is. And Saquon Barkley needs 101 rushing yards to break Eric Dickerson's single-season rushing record. But it turns out he's not going to play this Sunday against the New York Giants. The rushing records will stand in both college and the pro, and we'll talk about Saquon a little bit later.
That's football.
Yeah. Oh, also, Dylan Gabriel didn't beat my guy Case Keenum's touchdown record.
Tied it, though.
But I thought he was one off.
No,
he tied
it. He tied it.
Oh, he did tie it?
Yeah.
Oh, darn it. Also, right. By the way, Cam Ward broke it, but they don't count his Incarnate Word stats.
That's a lame.
Kind of, but I guess you don't know who Incarnate Word's playing. Cam Ward almost broke it in one game. That guy is insane. Okay, my stock down, back to NFL. I feel bad if anyone had to watch this. I don't even know what day of the week it was. But the Seattle-Chicago game, Thomas Brown, the Bears interim coach, is going to take the bullet on this one because nobody knows how to call timeouts in the fourth quarter of an NFL game anymore. But he especially screwed that up. Basically, the Bears had a chance. Like, Seahawks kept letting them get back in the game, They had their final drive. They did call a timeout on one key play, and most of the clock went away, and they lost 6-3. It was the ugliest final 3 minutes of a game time management I've ever seen.
You can put Thomas Brown. We can put Raheem Morris in that boat. We can put Zach Taylor in that boat. How do these coaches not have a clue of when to call timeouts? It's baffling. I saw someone else say this. Like, I forgot who it was. I think our friend Shil Kapadia. You're in the office. You're 100 hours a week. The football coaches, they sleep in the office. You know, they eat and breathe and live football 24 hours a day. Nobody's thinking about the strategy of when to call timeouts because it's painful. Painful. He's not the only one.
Yeah, but I mean, there was Thomas Brown actually would just like let the clock run out, then call the timeout. He was just a total disaster. I feel bad. He's very young. I'm sure he has a good future as a offensive coordinator, but he is not ready to be a head coach. And if you're a Bears fan, I know it doesn't matter you're out of the playoffs, but it's getting worse and worse.
Can I do one more stock down here?
Sure.
I got a couple more, but stock down New Year's resolutions. Not a big fan. I don't think we need this like random flip of the calendar to all of a sudden try to put all this pressure on ourselves that we have to make these gigantic life changes. I'm always stocked down on New Year's resolutions. I think it's one of the sillier traditions that we have, and most people don't follow through with them, and then that causes people to feel bad because, like, oh, my New Year's resolution, I gave up on it in 2 weeks. Anyone else with me?
I'm actually kind of okay with them. It's a nice aspirational thing.
It's good to have them. I don't think you'll ever do them, but...
Exactly. I think people... I actually read that people do go to the gym more in January.
That does happen.
They do. And anyone who has a gym membership knows if you actually go any other month of the year, it's just insanely packed in the month of January. And then February comes, and by March, it's back to just the people you see all the time. I don't know. I don't like New Year's resolutions. I just think it's like you're setting yourself up here when... You know, if you've ever really made a life change in your life, something significant or even something small, it doesn't happen with the snap of a finger. Sometimes you got to work at it.
That's why I think sometimes the best resolutions are either the ones that are super, super, I don't want to say unattainable, but super high end. So like you really got to, like, it's going to take longer than a couple of weeks to get it done. Or there's stuff small, like, hey, I'm going to take the trash out every couple of days. Like, that's something that is attainable, not... I'm going to go to the gym every day.
I'm going to lose 50 pounds in the month of January.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the gym every week for 54 weeks or whatever. That's a lot harder.
Can I throw in also the Texans offense as a sock down?
New Year's resolutions and what happened to the Texans offense?
What did happen? I'm dying to know the backstory there.
Man, we've got so much in front of us. Coming up next, the biggest questions heading into the NFL weekend.